Thoughts on Jude. Jude 5-7. Reminders, Part 2. Let me come to the main point in these verses 5-7. Jude is driving home his point about the false teachers and the way they're mangling the gospel, ruining the gospel, and the damage that will cause. And he's using illustrations to drive home this point, to make it clear to his readers. And he gives three illustrations. Israel, the angels, and Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, what is his main point? Beware of apostasy. Here are these teachers coming in. Their teaching is coming into the ecclesia. It's coming amongst the congregations of God's people. And here are God's people, and if they're not awake and aware and alert to this, then they're going to be sucked into this false teaching. And as Judas said, these are godless men. They change the grace of our God into a license for immorality. They deny Jesus Christ, our only sovereign and Lord. What more do you want? What a catastrophe it is that this teaching is going on. But imagine, if you buy into it, if you take it up, if you swallow it, if you tolerate it, if you allow it to go on, what will happen to yourselves and to the succeeding generations? The gospel, the grace, the Christ himself is distorted, it's utterly false, it's ruined utterly. And Jude drives home this point with the three illustrations. And what's the word that he wants to fix in their minds? Beware of apostasy. Beware of going down this route. Look at Israel, he says. Look at the angels. Look at Sodom and Gomorrah. I think the point is this. These three, Israel, angels, Sodom and Gomorrah, started with tremendous advantages. Think of Israel. Go back to Abraham, go back to the covenant, go back to Exodus, go back to Moses, go back to the promises. Think of the Exodus itself, the deliverance from the slavery of Egypt, the Red Sea, Sinai, the promises of God, the hopes that they had, the assurance that God had given them, the tokens that he had displayed, the manna, the quails and so on. I mean, what more do they need? And yet, we know when it came to the crunch, time and time and time again, whatever their professors, oh, we'll do whatever you said. You get it in Exodus 19, but you get it in Joshua 2 at the end of Joshua. You get it time and again. Israel's always saying, we will do it, we will do it. And when it came to the crunch, Israel failed. It believed the prophets of doom. No, we can't take it. They took into paganism. They bought into paganism. And it goes on and on and on. Think of Israel. All the advantages. Think of them passing through the wilderness. What was that for? A time of judgment when the whole adult population was wiped out apart from two men. Even Moses himself did not go into the promised land. Joshua and Caleb only survived. Think of Israel. Think of the angels. Think of their former position in heaven itself. Think of the being in the presence of God, serving God, and yet they fell. Think of Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot could see it was a well-favored land. He left Abraham with the poorer half, as it were. He had the pleasure of it, Sodom and Gomorrah, the fruitful land, but it was a corrupt place. And what happened to it? Even though Lot was there making some sort of testimony, I presume, as we are told he did, he's a just man. It's difficult to understand completely, but there it is. He made his testimony in Sodom and Gomorrah. Even so, Sodom and Gomorrah fell. Even though Abraham prayed, still Sodom and Gomorrah failed. So what's the point for us, my friend? False teachers are about. They're in the ecclesia. They're in the pulpits. They're in the internet. They're selling their books. They're producing their YouTubes. They're everywhere. And believers are gullibly buying into it. Now, my friend, are you one of these who will say, well, I'm a 5-point Calvinist? Well, so am I. Perseverance of the saints, he said, oh my, yes. But that doesn't mean eternal security. That means perseverance of the saints. The saints persevere. They grow in grace. They're transformed into the likeness of Christ. They're conformed to him. They grow. They develop. They don't drift back. Hebrews is full of this warning. As I've said in the previous discourse earlier this week, commentators find their way around these texts, these passages. Don't find your way around them. Don't commit apostasy. I'm not saying be a heresy hunter and looking for trouble everywhere, but be on your guard, be alert, be awakened. Take the warning, my friend. Take the warning seriously. Come to it. Let me give that illustration I've used before of a coachman. A man wanted to employ, in the days of coachmen, he wanted to employ a coachman, and he had to pass over a mountain pass very regularly. He had three candidates. He asked the first candidate, how close could you get to the edge safely? Oh, I could get within a matter of a few inches. The next man, well, I would be about a foot. The third man said, well, I would stay as far away from the edge as I possibly could. That's the man for me. That's the man for me. In other words, my friend, take the warning seriously. Be on your guard. And don't buy into false teaching, whatever you do. You wouldn't drink poison. Don't imbibe poison from the pulpit. Ah, but he's a nice man. He's a good man. He's been to the college. He's done this. He's done that. He read the books. He's got a wonderful library. Oh, yes. But is he teaching error, or is he preaching Christ?